Live, on location, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer and engineer, Mr. Aaron Zommers, on the board back at the world headquarters in Madison. We are live here in Waukesha, the beautiful Marcus Theater, for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Brewers. It is Wednesday, September 11th, 2024. I'm not sure if we have him along with us in the car or not, but Mr. Zommers, it is
Pump Day!
The camel has traveled to Waukesha, ladies and gentlemen. We're very happy. Even in the world premiere, we have a camel on standby. Mr. Zommers, how are things back in Madison?
Going well. It's pretty nice outside. It seems like some of the smoke is clearing up.
Yes, yeah, that smoke nice. From wildfires out west, kind of floating over here. But otherwise, a pretty fine day across much of the state, and we appreciate all the great work you're doing back at the home studio.
However, there is one condition that I'm noticing here, and it's jealousy that I'm not there because you're having so much fun. I cannot wait to see this movie on Friday.
Yeah, I wish you were here. We're thinking of you in spirit. But yeah, I mean, just having the filmmakers at the table, Kelly and Sean and Paul, their energy is infectious. I can tell how happy they are, and I can't wait to see it tonight. Really looking forward to it. Jeff Perry, our ongoing contributor and friend, joining us here at the table live and in person, taking a day off from his regular gig to be here with us, and he is the host of This Week in Music History on the great community station WVMO across the pond in the Dane County, on the Lake Monona side.
That's right. And I didn't wear my Brewers jersey today. I didn't know exactly how I should be dressed. I have my Brewer blue.
Yeah, you're fine.
But I do have my Home of Bernie Brewer boxer shorts.
Oh, so. There you go. That's fantastic.
Well, now I'm leaving. I can't beat that.
Also, we are pleased to have at the anchor desk here on location, she is the host of the fantastic program that precedes us each and every day from 10 until noon on the Civic Media Radio Network, the host of Matt Nair on Air, Ms. Jane Matt Nair herself, live and in person. Jane, it is great to see you, my friend.
It's great to see you, too. We haven't actually been together since we did our road trip.
I know.
In western and northern Wisconsin, so it's lovely to see you. Thank you for letting me force my way onto your program.
Not at all. I called up this morning and talked to Greg Bach, of course, who was on the show as well. Then you were sitting there, and I said, yeah, come on over, you guys, if here you are.
And Greg should be coming.
He should
be on the way, yes.
Well, look at that. Get both of you here. Yep. That's well, I really appreciate you being here. We're going to talk politics in a minute, but first, Jane, you know, each of us that's a Wisconsinite, whether a huge sports fan or not, I think if you were alive at the time, you just remember this. What are your – you've been in radio for a while. Had you gotten into broadcasting yet at that point?
I had just started my first job in radio in New Ulm, Minnesota.
Oh.
For KNUJ Radio, AM Radio. Mm-hmm. And I did weekends, and I did not know this when I first started, but it's a very rural area, and I would have to read live farm implement commercials.
Really? Yeah.
That have like 7-syllable words.
Right.
Did a little of that myself.
Yeah. So yeah. I learned just to say things really fast. If you're riding according to the you want to call Frank. Do that.
Farmer's implement.
Yes, but I was rehearsing for a play. I remember this very well. I was rehearsing for a play while the Brewers were playing in that series, and I would run from rehearsal to the bar across the street when I wasn't on stage.
Wow.
Just to keep up on the score. So
nice.
Because I used to go to opening day with my friends all
sure.
the time.
Yeah.
When I grew up in Hartford, it's about an hour northwest of Milwaukee, so we used to go to opening day all the time. And then certainly when the Brewers made it that far that year,
yeah.
and I wasn't here,
right.
But I still try to dip in and cheer on the boys.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't matter whether people are, and Paul, one of the producers, I thought his comments were so fascinating because he's a California guy, unlike Sean and Kelly, not a Wisconsin kid, and just to see his passion, and said really the more we got into this, it's not so much a sports story as a love story between players and personnel and a city.
Yep, And the fans.
And the fans, yeah.
And the fans who have stuck through thick and thin with the Brewers. We've done it with the Packers. I remember my father was a huge Packer fan. He suffered through all of the 70s and 80s. And Don Mikowski and all those. Yes, you were great guys. But there is something special about sports fans in Wisconsin. And Brewers fans and Packers fans just globally, I think.
Yeah, and we're all of a certain age old enough to remember when the Packers used to have a couple of games in County Stadium.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Year,
right?
Every season.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was a big deal.
Yeah, huge deal.
Terrible place for football.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever go to a game at County Stadium?
No, but I had people who would go. It's the sight lines.
Did you? I did not.
No, I didn't.
No, the sight lines were not meant for football.
It looked weird on TV always when they play that. And so that's, you know, eventually when they redid Lambeau, they all went up there. But there's still the green and gold package. So people had season tickets at County Stadium, ended up getting tickets at Lambeau.
Right.
I mean, it's just a part of, you know, I mean, your show is here, Jane, in the Waukesha area. You know Southeast Wisconsin so well. The Brewers are just, they're the Wisconsin team, but I see, you know, those people that are from and live in Southeast Wisconsin, along with the Bucks, it's just indelible.
Oh, absolutely. You have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, well, yes, people do come to your door and check. No, they don't. if you're a fan.
That only happens in Florida if you sign certain petitions.
Yeah. That's a really good point you make, yes. But no, it is part of the fabric of the city, is part of the fabric of the state. And I think for a city of Milwaukee size, and even just for Wisconsin, we have a wealth of sports teams, and we do. Not just professionally, but college and high school and just all across the board. So it's part of who we are.
Mr. Perry's going to step away just for a while. He'll sit here. But we're going to talk a little bit with Jane Matinier, host of Matinier on Air every morning from 10 until noon. Jane, there was a little debate last night, as it turned out. And give us your reflections. Ask Pat Kreitlow just what's your knee-jerk reaction.
Well, I was listening when you were on with Pat this morning as I was driving out to the station, and I agree with Pat. I certainly felt much better this morning when I woke up than after the last debate when I woke up.
Mm-hmm.
That was not good.
No.
It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful to see. There were a couple of things that really stood out to me, though, as a childless, catless, dogless, postmenopausal woman who has no purpose in life. That,
or so some say.
Some have said, many people are saying that.
Yes.
That he never referred to her by name. He called her she and her. He never looked her in the eye. Mm-hmm. And she went up to him to shake his hand because he would not have done that.
Yes, I thought he would not have done that. That was a key moment. And Biden and Trump did not shake hands on the first debate.
Oh, that's right.
They didn't.
So that
she was the bigger person, as it turns out.
What a shock.
Right?
What a shock. And there were a couple of clips from last night that were just so
they were so good.
They were so good. Aaron, do you have the clip about Donald Trump's plan for the Affordable Care Act?
I have concepts of a plan. I'm not president right now. But if we come up with something, I would only change it if we come up with something that's better and less expensive. And there are concepts and options we have to do that.
I have a concept of a plan. I told our producer Galvin and Greg this morning, I said, now when I come in every day, I'm not going to put anything on our show plan because I have a concept of a plan.
Right?
And that's what we're going to work off of, because who needs a plan? I'm not starting the show right now.
All right.
What are you talking about? He promised us a better replacement for the Affordable Care Act for 4 years. Mm. It's coming in 2 weeks. Yeah. I'll have it in 2 weeks. I'll make the announcement in 2 weeks. The same with the infrastructure plan. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks, we're on it. It's going to be better. It's going to be great. None of that happened.
Right.
And so, at least on my show, I have a concept of a plan. I'm going to burn that into the ground for the next 55 days.
We're going to hear that a lot of Matt Narrier.
Yes, just a little snip here and there.
Do you think that was on the teleprompter? I don't think so.
Nicely done, Mr. Zion.
Oh, I have a concept of a plan.
You make a great point here. And I know it is humorous. But I think there's also just, you make a great point in that it's a good reminder. I talked to Pat about this, that after 3.5 years of sanity and leadership, whether or not you agree with all of the Biden-Harris policy, no one can say that they weren't conducting themselves in presidential manner, in leadership manners. And we all kind of got used to the normal again. And I thought last night did a good job of reminding people of the just odd, I'm trying to be kind, weird behavior of Donald Trump, where he was telling people to drink bleach, and last night eating cats and dogs, and now to your point, Jane, back in the last term of Trump, the infrastructure plan was always 2 weeks away, never happened. A healthcare plan, to your point, still has not happened. And do people really want to go back to that?
For some, yes, and I think for some people who are MAGA, they will love him no matter what. They will never change their mind, and there is no fact that you can show them that will ever change their mind. But I do believe that there are people who are still on the fence, who are either independents or Republicans who have not decided. And those are the people, I think, who, after seeing the two different people last night and their two different approaches, essentially to reality,
right,
will walk away with that.
Yeah.
One of these people will actually do things and accomplish things, and one person is just going to talk about eventually doing something, maybe eventually.
855-752-4842. Let's go quickly to the phone lines. Ron, listening on WAUK here in Milwaukee. Ron, can you make it quick, about a minute? What do you got?
Okay, 1 minute's worth or less. Here's my idea of the primary concept of a plan that Trump has. The primary concept is that he is going to prevent the conception of women who don't follow the rules. Short enough for you?
No, that was brief. I appreciate it. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate the call. Ron makes a good point, Jane, and I'm not sure this got fleshed out and talked about enough last night. I mean, Vice President Harris made the point, but Republicans like to talk about, as a former Republican, small government. What is more intrusive and big government than being tracking women's periods?
In Texas just filed a lawsuit because they want to be able to access women's health records when they go out of state to get care. They want to be able to monitor those women.
Right.
I've said this for decades. The GOP is nothing more than government so small it fits in my uterus. It doesn't belong there.
You can hear that every morning, 10 until noon, the Jane Mattinara Show. She's coming back. Jeff Perry's coming back. We're on location in Waukesha, the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 82 Brewers on the Civic Media Radio Network. Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Tunnel Ball Show, live on location here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are at the beautiful Marcus Theater, right in front of the ultrasound. Dolby, what is that? DLX? Deluxe? I don't know. I don't know.
Deluxe.
I think you mean ultra screen, not ultrasound.
Did I say ultrasound?
You did.
That's another service they have here at Marcus Theater.
As it turns out, you can watch the Brewers movie and
get an ultrasound.
Dr. Kristen Lyerly will be doing that in theater number 2 right down the hall, as it turns out. Thank you, Mr. Somers.
Here's your ticket. Turn your head and cough.
Where do I sign up? I'm excited. You understand? I'm excited. I probably haven't had enough sleep. Got into Waukesha. I don't know. What was it? Chris Kesey, our on-site producer. What was it? 1:15? Something like that?
Oh, my.
Wow.
You guys did a great job last night. Terry
Thank
Bell
you, yeah.
And Todd and Trigvy, and you had a whole
Jan
Angela
Schaefer,
Lang.
Angela Lang.
Yeah. So well done last
and
night.
Corey
for the recaps.
Brian Kelly.
Yep.
I mean, it was a team effort. So we thank everybody for doing that. It was fun. It was a good night. But Chris, our on-site producer here and videographer, we got in the truck and we pulled into the old Hampton Inn sometime after 1 o'clock. I don't remember exactly when. And I hadn't eaten all day.
Oh, Todd.
And so here was the thing. Like, and Chris is like, well, there's a Topper's Pizza down the street. And I'm like, nah. And so I had like a little thing of macaroni and cheese in the hotel at 1:15. That went to bed.
So you got like 4 hours of sleep.
Something like that. Okay. So I'm excited. I'm running on adrenaline. Anyway, the point is we're here for this movie, and we have the lovely and talented Ms. Jane Matinier of Matinier on Air every morning from 10 until noon, which precedes us. We have Jeff Perry here as well, our ongoing contributor as a guest host here for this great new production. Jane, you want to talk another clip here quickly?
I would, from last night. And we had several callers and texters this morning on our show who pointed out that I think, you know, and Greg mentioned this morning too. Donald Trump started off pretty solid.
Yeah.
The first 3 to 5 minutes, he seemed not nuts.
Right.
And it didn't take long for that to devolve. And I think when Kamala Harris mentioned crowds at his crowd size, and people leaving his rallies, that really seemed to shake him. Aaron, I'm pretty sure you have that clip where Kamala Harris talks about Donald Trump's rallies and encourages people to go to them.
Tell you something, he's going to talk about immigration a lot tonight, even when it's not the subject that is being raised. And I'm going to actually do something really unusual, and I'm going to invite you to attend one of Donald Trump's rallies, because it's a really interesting thing to watch. You will see during the course of his rallies, he talks about fictional characters like Hannibal Lecter. He will talk about windmills cause cancer. And what you will also notice is that people start leaving his rallies early out of exhaustion and boredom. And I will tell you, the one thing you will not hear him talk about is you. You will not hear him talk about your needs, your dreams, and your desires. And I'll tell you, I believe you deserve a president who actually puts you first. And I pledge to you that I will.
That stung. That stung him.
I thought that was perhaps the moment of the evening.
It certainly was. And Aaron, let's hear Donald Trump's response to Kamala Harris.
Just a moment.
Sure.
All right, sorry about that. It was just a bit outside.
Almost there.
We're loading it up now. We have dial up here. No, not really. Right.
Dipping. He did not take well to that. He's very, very sensitive about that. And I do want to say, I have watched Donald Trump's rallies. Mm-hmm. People leave.
Oh, yeah.
People leave before he's done.
Well, Dan Schaefer, who was at the one of the Milwaukee or one of the Southeast Wisconsin ones, said he saw it himself.
Oh, yeah. People have heard the song and dance. They've heard the jokes.
Yeah.
It's old. It's tired. It's the same act. Now we're going on 9 years of the same act.
Yeah.
And I don't see that tent growing. He's playing the hits for his base. I don't see how that's going to grow the base, although he's already told them, I don't need your votes. We have enough votes.
Well, and then when we talked about there's a trick, the Olson Lincoln Project, that in this election, whomever wins this state presidentially is going to have to go beyond their base.
Yes.
And only one, I mean, when you have Dick and Liz Cheney endorsing Kamala Harris, and when you have the other person whose own former vice president won't even endorse him. I mean, that's pretty much all you need to know about who's trying to grow the base.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting as well when he was bringing up again the people in Springfield, Ohio, eating pets. And he said, I saw it on TV. Someone said it on TV.
On Fox or Owen or
whatever.
But
that tells me that he believes everything he sees on TV.
Oh, yeah.
So, therefore, Hannibal Lecter is a real person.
Right.
Because the movie's coming up on his television.
Right. And, of course, the theory is that because Hannibal Lecter was in a quote-unquote insane asylum, I know that's not a politically correct word anymore, but and then when he hears that people are coming here to seek asylum, he doesn't understand that that is a immigration term, not a mental term.
Which is also equally concerning.
That
should be equally concerning. And I do want to give a shout out to Kamala Harris I've seen several articles this morning, the difficult needle she had to thread with not looking too mean, not being too sappy, she had a very, very tight rope to walk. And I thought she did a brilliant job. I would never have been able to control my face like Kamala Harris controlled her face.
Well, Angela Lang was on the postgame show last night. She happens to be a black woman, and she said for a woman of color, it's particularly hard to do what you just said.
Absolutely, because you will be judged on everything.
Right.
Do you see how she lifted her eyebrow that time? Did you see how she sounded a little shrill that time? Did you see this? Did you see this?
Right.
I think it was really, really well done. Of course, House Speaker Moses Mike Johnson was on Fox this morning talking about the results from Newsmax and the Daily Caller, Todd, gave Trump the win by like 98-6.
Yeah.
He won the debate,
yeah,
according to Newsmax and the Daily Caller. And Greg's uncle, Tinfoil Fred, also he has a channel that they like the debate too. So.
Well, there you go. There you go. More on that every morning with Jay Metnar. Metnar on air every morning between the hours of 10 and 12. Let's turn our attention back to the particular reason why we're here on location at the Marcus Theater in beautiful Waukesha, Wisconsin, where Jane's based out of, by the way, WAUK.
Yes.
Right here in
540 a.m.
540 a.m. Jeff Perry, our ongoing contributor, is here as well. We're here for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 82 Brewers. I want to give Jay and I a couple of trivia questions.
Yeah. So last time I was on your show, I stumped you pretty good.
Yes, you did.
Some of these. So I'll pick up where we left off there.
Right.
So the Brewers in the American League Championship Series won 3-2 against?
In the Championship Series?
Yes.
The Angels, right?
Sure.
California Angels.
Yes, right. Very good.
The Brewers were the first team to come back and win a championship series after losing the first two games.
Yes.
They were the first team to win all of their championship series home games.
Nice.
Back then it was 5 games, not 7 like it is now.
Right.
It was the first American League championship series that did not feature, in history, that did not feature the Yankees, Orioles, or A's.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
At the time.
At the time.
Yeah. Because they were big. They were big.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
So then we get to the World Series, and the Brewers played, of course,
the dreaded, evil St. Louis Cardinals.
That's right. So the Milwaukee, of course, had the brewery, the Miller Brewery.
Yes.
And St. Louis had Anheuser-Busch.
Yes.
So what did the media dub the World Series?
Oh, remember this one, Jane?
Beer ball?
The Suds series?
The Suds series.
The Suds
well
series.
Done.
I pay attention once in a while. I always pay attention every morning between 10 and
nice.
Noon. Jane Metnar, Metnar on air. Jane, thank you so much.
Thank you for letting me invade your program.
Always a pleasure. Come on back. We have Moose and Jim. We'll tell you their last names. They're actual Brewer players from the 82 series. Don't go anywhere. We're live on location here on 7th. Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show, live on location for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers World Series run. We are here in Waukesha, Wisconsin, at the beautiful Marcus Theater, where the world premiere happens tonight. So excited. Jeff Perry and I were not quite in high school. We were in middle school at the time at Richland Center Middle School. Jeff Perry, our ongoing contributor and guest host, joins me here at the table. Jeff, what an exciting day.
Oh, it sure is. And we just got a treat. We got to see a bunch of autographs.
Yeah.
That the son of the movie producer,
Sean Hanisch's son.
Yeah, got last night from the Brewer players from 1982 and the fresh autographs from that. Just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's something you
My
can't
excitement
replicate.
Level is way up here, Todd.
And all these guys are going to be here tonight. So many of the 82 Brewers. Understand Bob Uecker is going to make an appearance. Former owner and former commissioner of baseball, Bud Selig, is going to be in town right here at the Marcus Theater. So cannot wait for that coming up a little bit later tonight. Joining us right now via telephone, we have a couple of the former players on those great teams of 1982. A couple of pitchers. Jeff, let's go to the bullpen, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's go out to the pitching. We have Moose Haas and Jim Slayton, two of the great pitchers from the 82 series. Gentlemen, first of all, congratulations not just on great careers, but for being a part of this film. We cannot wait to see it. Thanks for being on the program.
You're back. Thank you. Can't wait to see you.
Yeah, we are really, really looking forward to it. Moose, let's start with you a little bit. Give us just a quick synopsis of your time. I know that Kelly and Sean said that the two of you in the documentary, which we're going to see tonight, there isn't any narration. It's just all these people just having conversations. And the two of you, they said, played off of each other, probably the best of anybody in the film. Moose, what was it like for you just going through this experience?
No, I think this is a fantastic thing. It started just over 2 years ago with the idea. And I believe Gorman was big with that into getting this started. And 2 years ago, we interviewed right here in town, and it's coming to fruition tonight, and it's a lot of hype going on with this, and we can't wait to see this thing.
Yeah, I mean, Jim, what we're hearing is at these performances across Wisconsin, not just the premiere tonight, but are being sold out and more shows are having to be added. And because it's not streaming anywhere, which I think is a good thing, yeah, that people are saying, we got to go to a theater and see this. Jim, what was this experience like for you?
Oh, it was great. Everybody's been good. Sean and Kelly, the producers, have been fantastic. They've kept us informed, and like Moose said, we were here 2 years ago, and that's when we did the interviews, and the thing was just getting started. We were kind of wondering what was going to go on with this, if it was still going to go through, and they always would email us and keep us informed on what was going on, and they've been fantastic, and we're really looking forward to seeing the movie. We haven't seen it yet.
Wow, that's incredible. Jim, let's start with you, then go to Moose. Thinking back to that memorable run to the World Series in 82, the fact that the players and the community were so interwoven, I'm sure there's just a flood, you could talk all day, but when someone says to you, what was 82 like? What was the first one or two things that pop in your head, Jim?
Well, obviously, it was getting to the World Series. We played the Angels in the playoffs, and we lost the first two games there, and then had to come back to Milwaukee and win three in a row to get to the World Series. So that was quite exciting, and then we went all the way to the seventh game of the World Series, and unfortunately we lost that game. But what I remember most are the people here and the fans that were going through a rough time and in those years because of the recession. And if they could tell something special was going on, and they just were great. They showed up at the ballpark. They didn't want to leave. It's not like in California when you go to a game and you leave in the fifth inning.
Right.
They stayed for the ninth inning, the last pitch. They were amazing.
Moose, how about you? When someone says it brings up 82, what are the first couple of things that pop into your head?
Amazing season of things that went on. And like Jim was saying, with the fans in this town of Milwaukee, they support their sports teams, and they definitely supported us. And it showed, you know, and then Jim and I talked about it, and the other guys on the team, about the parade they threw for when we lost the game. So that was just amazing, and they threw that together so fast at Milwaukee Din and the city that they put that parade on for us, and we felt like we were winners, and I think the town felt the same way.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I say, I was a kid at the time, but you know, just for myself, you made us feel like winners. I mean, growing up in Wisconsin always seems like, oh, the Wisconsin, whether it's Badgers or Bucks or Brewers or Packers, you know, it seems like that a lot of times Wisconsin teams just feel like we never quite get there. And just as a kid, you gave us, I mean, I remember watching these games with my grandparents on television and just hanging on every one of you guys' pitches, every one of the swings at the bat. And you brought families together, and that's the thing. You thanks to you and your teammates, you gave me memories of my grandparents and my parents that I'll have for the rest of my life. So that's the thing that comes to my mind. I want to bring on A friend of mine, in full disclosure, one of my former bosses. He was a United States Congressman for the 2nd District in the Madison area. But for this segment, more importantly, and of course, he hosts the wonderful Lost in the Middle podcast here on Civic Media. But for more importantly, Scott Klug, you had a long career before you got into elected office in Congress as a broadcaster. Scott, welcome, and thanks for taking time and being back at the home studio in Madison. What are your memories of 82?
Well, I was working as a TV reporter in Washington, D.C. I'm from Milwaukee originally. In fact, I actually worked as an usher when the Brewers came to town. And even before that, in a little-known baseball fact, I don't remember the number, the White Sox played 24 or 25 home games in Milwaukee before the Pilots moved. I think there was some sense that the White Sox thought they were getting a bad deal in Chicago with the Cubs, and they were threatening to move the franchise. So there I was in my uniform at 18 years old telling people where to – probably 17 years old now that I think about it. So longstanding Brewers fan. I'm a Brewers fan. My wife is a Brewers fanatic in capital letters, underline, exclamation point. She will watch every single baseball game this year when the Brewers play. So when they were coming to Baltimore with the pennant race on the way, I decided to buy tickets for the Friday game and for the Sunday game. They just had to win one of the series. There was a doubleheader in between for which I did not have tickets. So on Friday night, they lost. A friend of mine came up with tickets for Saturday, and they lost, and they lost. So there we showed up Sunday worrying about the worst. And because we bought the tickets early, we actually had good seats in the lower grandstand. And right behind us was Moose Haas's wife, who was with about seven other wives cheering loudly. So we were part of a little Milwaukee Brewers cheering section right in downtown Baltimore.
Moose, that's incredible. I mean, to hear stories like this all these years later of just how small of a world is it, right? What you guys did.
Well, you know, I mean, to talk about Baltimore and winning and clinching that over there in Baltimore, that is where I was born and raised. So that was extra special to me to do that in the stadium that I followed as a kid.
Wow, that's just incredible. Jeff Perry, you were at Game 5 to send the Brewers to the World Series that year. Any questions?
Well, I have, you guys can't see this on the phone, but for our viewers on the stream, I have a couple of baseball cards here from 1982 of Moose and Jim from my collection. And what I would like to know, if you don't mind talking about it, start with you, Jim. What was it like transitioning managers in the season and going from a sort of a, I guess you could say, a subpar record of, I think it was 23 and 24 when Harvey Keene took over, and then just kind of exploding under his management style? What was that like to shift gears in the middle of a season and just go from a sort of a mediocre season to an outstanding season almost overnight, it seemed?
Yeah, Buck Rogers was our manager, and we just weren't playing too well. Harvey Keene was the bench coach, and, you know, everybody liked Harvey, and we were really familiar with him. And when they let Buck Rogers go, Harvey took over, and he said, just go out and play. I'm going to make out the lineup card. You know, we had five Hall of Famers on that team. The guys knew how to play, and he said, just go out and have fun and play. And he just kind of filled out the lineup card, and everybody felt like there was a weight lifted off of them, and there they go. They just took off.
Did you have a similar experience, Moose?
Yeah, it's the same. I mean, as a player, of course, I was a starting pitcher serving fourth or fifth day, but not an everyday regular player, but To be that comfortable knowing, even in the morning when you get up, that you're going to go to the ballpark and you're going to play. You don't have to go in and check the lineup card out. And I think that's what makes a team consistent, instead of now they're moving guys all over the field. And sometimes you can tell that, you know, they're not comfortable playing the position and they don't know where they're going to hit in the order. So, but back then, Harvey just wrote them down, like Jim said. And you know you're playing, so go get it.
Scott Kluge.
Hey, I'm going to ask a question. So if you get mad at me, don't get mad at Jeff and Todd. The moment I remember in that game, you know, there were a couple home runs that Robin Yount hit, and I remember the great pitching performance. The drive towards the end of the game down the left field line, and why I would describe Ben Ogilvie as a great offensive player, his defense left something to be desired from time to time. And he made a great sliding catch down the left field line that saved the game. What went through your minds when you saw that ball heading down the left field line?
Well, I mean, it was when he caught it.
Who is this for?
It fit his nickname. We called him Spider-Man. That's exactly what he did. The way he threw it like that, that ball.
Where did the name come from?
You know, when you have a an outfielder that hits 40 home runs a year, you don't talk about their defense that much. And he was the Spider-Man, and that's what we called him because he would climb the fences. He would do anything to catch a ball.
That's absolutely incredible. And you know, Jeff, you touched on it. You know, Harvey Keene, I mean, he was straight out of Central Casting. You know, I mean, the guy has literally a peg leg and lives above a bar in Milwaukee. Guys, can you get any more Milwaukee? Does that symbolize the 82 Brewers any more than that, Jim the Moose?
There was quite a few times, during my career here that we had visited that establishment to go over to see Harvey. he was with us for so long. We got to know him and love the guy, and he played hard.
Yeah.
Moose, I want to ask you a question, though. I'll shut up after this one.
No, that's fine.
I promise you. But, Moose, did Milwaukee and Baltimore seem similar to you? I always thought at the end of the day they were sort of blue-collar, a beer and a shot kind of towns. And when I lived in D.C., I used to love to go up to Baltimore because, you know, in Washington it was white starched shirts and rep ties. And in Baltimore it was sort of anything goes.
I'll say kind of. I mean, when I grew up and raised in Baltimore area, I should say, I wasn't old enough to experience things of the two cities. But I got to tell you what, I wouldn't want to play for anybody else. Unfortunately, I had to, but Milwaukee and Milwaukee's fans and the organization. And the fans are still there behind their teams. And Jim and I and everybody else wish this team the best.
Yeah, it's... It's just an incredible story, and we had Paul, one of the other producers, on earlier, guys, and he was talking about this being a love story. So I think what's cool about this film is, if you don't like sports, it's still a great film because of this love story. We're going to come back, talk a little bit more to Moose Haas and Jim Slayton, Scott Klug, Jeff Perry. We are live on location here in Waukesha for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 82 World Series. Don't come on, don't go away, come on back. Welcome back to the Title Ball Show, live on location at the beautiful Marcus Theater, the Marcus Majestic Theater here in Waukesha, Wisconsin, for the world premiere of Just a Bit Outside, the story of the 1982 Milwaukee Brewers. It is great to be here today. We are live on location. It's the world premiere tonight. It is sold out, but go to justabitoutsidethemovie.com, and that will take you, or you can also go to marcustheaters.com. There are tickets available later, I believe, for Friday showings. There's a Thursday one Brookfield, I think, that's also sold out for tomorrow, but tickets remain for the general premiere on Friday the 13th of the movie at various select cities around Wisconsin. And Jeff, as Letterman is fond of saying, hopefully one of your cities has been selected. Yes, thank you very much. Jeff Perry joining us here at the table, and on the phone, two of the great players of that 82 team, two great pitchers, Moose Haas and Jim Slayton. Guys, we appreciate you being here. Can't wait to hopefully meet you in person tonight at the world premiere here at the theater. But tell us just a little bit more, Moose and then Jim, about this film as a player, but now having been a part of this documentary, what do you hope that viewers take away after seeing this movie?
Well, I hope that they see the hard work and the hard play that we did together back there. And I know they've listened and read a lot of things about the team, and they know how close we were. And that was probably one of the magic things that happened with our club, is how close everybody was and still are. And we get together with things like this, and sometimes every fifth year, and it's like he never left them. So it's a fun thing to see that, have the town support us like that. And it's going to be fantastic for us to view this film tonight.
Jim, how about you?
Yeah, I think they'll take out of it, like, we were a family. and we were together every single day for a long time. And I think the fans will get out of this by saying, hey, we were part of that family. And they were there to support us. And, you know, when we're doing our thing, we're kind of in our own little bubble, and we don't think about too many other things. But when you get out of baseball and you reflect back, and what went on that year was just unbelievable. I remember just a short story in game four of the World Series. I got the win, and I was in the bullpen, and Moose started that game. And I was like a vulture sitting on the perch out there in the bullpen, and I swooped down over the fence and grabbed the ball and got that W for Moose, and that's what I remember.
Is that what you remember at Moose? I think
I'm
that's
sorry,
just great.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, I just said, is that the way you remember at Moose?
Well, kind of, but you know, back, it's been a long time. The teammates gave him the vulture. That's not his real nickname. That was better affectionately as Pop. So we all know Pop, not the vulture. You know, Moose nicknamed me Pops when I was 26 years old, and he was a 20-year-old rookie, and he nicknamed me Pop. And that stuck with me my whole career. Euchre calls me Pops. Raleigh Fingers calls me Pops.
Really?
I was 26 years old at the time.
Oh, yeah. My gosh.
True.
That's – go ahead. Guys,
no, I said very true. Very true.
What do you brought the name up? I know you probably get asked about this all the time. We've got about 3.5 minutes left here. But Bob Euchre. I mean, my God, is there a greater Wisconsin legend than him? He was there for your run. He's here for these young guys now. Your reflections on the great Bob Euchre?
Oh, it's one of a kind. You say Bob Euchre, everybody knows, probably worldwide. We were fortunate enough to have him as our announcer. Not only that, I mean, he participated he was in the locker room. He thought
Did he play pepper with you guys? Did he play pepper with you guys?
I don't remember. Well, maybe. I don't remember that. I know Bob Euchre threw batting practice for a lot of years. He threw batting practice to the hitters, and he was just like part of the team. He was in the clubhouse a lot, and you know, and on the road we'd go out together after games, and he would be right with the team. He was part of that team, and he kept us loose, believe me. Even to this day now, whenever I see Johnny Carson rerun and Euchre's on it, I'm watching it because he was just amazing.
Yeah, and the fact that, I mean, I was just at a game here a couple weeks ago when Jackson Churio hits a Grand Slam home run and listened to it on the Brewers Radio Network, the call is still gives me goosebumps. I mean, he's still got it. He hasn't slipped a beat on the air.
Euchre's 90, right. And the player who hit the home run, Churio, was 20. That's amazing to me.
Yes, 20. Yeah.
Very, very quickly,
Moose
guys.
Moose was 20.
Right? Yeah. Right? What do you think about, I mean, Pat Murphy, I mean, maybe it's unfair to say compare and contrast, but what do you guys mentioned earlier that Harvey Keene said, just go out there and play when he took over the team in 82. It seems like Pat Murphy is that kind of player. Is that part of their success this year?
Well, I think it is.
Pat Murphy did.
Sorry, Moose, you first, then Pat.
And, okay.
Jim. Moose, go ahead.
I remember Pat Murphy because I live in Arizona, in Phoenix area, and he was a manager down there for AFU, and he had a great reputation. They had great ball teams back then, so I knew the man knows what he's doing. So if he's doing the same thing that Harvey, Archie, we used to call him, put the names down, let him play, and I tell you, this team's got a good chance this year.
Jim?
Yeah, he's done a great job. I do follow them, and gosh, they've had 10 players that have come up with their first major league at bats this year, which is unbelievable. You know, they lost Burns. I really like Chorios, and he's 20 years old, and Adames is just having an unbelievable year.
Moose Haas, Jim Slayton, thank you so much for taking the time and spending with us. Congratulations on great careers. Thanks for giving us all the memories, and we look forward to seeing you tonight. And congrats on the film. Thank you so much, gentlemen. Appreciate it. Also, big thanks to Pat Kreitel earlier on the show, Kelly Call, producer of this film, Sean Hannish, director, producer, Jeff Perry, our co-host today, Jay Matner on air, Chris Giese, our on-site producer, Zahmer is back at the studio, and also Karina for the cookies. See you tomorrow. Keep banging your drum.